15%. I don't know if that's a statistically accurate number or not, but that's something probably all of us are thinking through this time of year, right? We go through the end of one year, we begin the next year, we begin to think through, how can I make my next year better than my previous year? And this whole idea of change, as Eric said, we're in the series today. We're beginning a new series called The DNA of Change, where we're going to be taking a look at the process of change in our lives and how, there actually is a process. And change is a normal part of what we go through, and then there are certain barriers that we experience to change, and we're going to be taking a look at how, when we actually embrace it and take this path of change, that we actually can go to new places. Change is possible, and we can actually begin new trajectories. For example, how about the Indianapolis Colts? I see a lot of Colts jerseys out in the seats today. Who would have thought a year ago, right, that we'd be sitting in a playoff berth today? In fact, I went to my closet to get a blue jersey. I haven't had a reason to get one all year. I didn't even have anybody that was left on the team, right? I had to go with Joe Adai, and so this is in honor of him. In fact, we looked it up this morning. I think it's like Jerry Hughes or Donald Hughes, the former running back for Notre Dame. Wears 29. He's on injured reserve. And so change. Who would have thought that certain changes that we struggled with, and yet in the end there are certain blessings, and you realize that the benefit of that. And so we're going to dive into this today. Happy New Year, by the way, as Eric shared a few minutes ago. My name is Kurt. I'm a lead pastor at Crosspoint. Really excited you're here with us today, whether it's your first time or whether you've been here with us before. And as we look at this today, there's some things I want to talk about that maybe will help you identify. Before we can begin to make some of the changes, we have to identify where we want to change. And one of the things I do pretty regularly from this platform as I teach is, I'll talk about, oftentimes a lot of my failures. Sometimes you'll hear my successes. But, one of the things that's happened over the last 2 or 3 years is we kick off the new year with some kind of series that has to do with, making a breakthrough or change or going to a new place. That's a really big deal to us around here. So I transformation and change. And so when we focus on this, oftentimes I'll even start at the beginning of the year talking about some of my previous mistakes that I've made over the last year as I've kind of worked through that myself. And I always walk out of here. I've done this a number of times where I walk out and I'll talk to one of my buddies or somebody, that I'll get some feedback from, and I'll be like, man, I just feel like I left way too much on the table today. I feel like I shared a little too much detail with my stories, especially my failings. And usually be like, oh, no, we like that. We love hearing how screwed up you are. It makes us all feel a lot better. And so today, I hope as we start this new year and we begin this series on change, what I really want to do is look at some of these mistakes I've made and talk about how maybe through these we can learn and you can learn and we can actually all go to a new place. And so I hope that we'll all be able to grow as a result of our time today. So before we do that, let's just take a moment and pray. God, I'm thankful that we can gather in this room today. I'm thankful that we can come into this dark place and we can be alive. Lot of other places, and it doesn't really matter what kind of spiritual or religious background we have. You meet us exactly where we are, and you know that I really don't care that much about talking about myself. And yet today, as I share about some of my mistakes, a few of my successes, but for some reason, God, and maybe some neurotic way, people actually grow when I do this. And so, God, I pray today that You would just guide my words, that my words would be your words, and that God, in some way, that we have this need to see how you work in other people's lives, and maybe when we get a glimpse of that, we see how you can work in our life. And so I pray, God, that you would just individually customize this experience today for every single one of us, to whatever we need, wherever we are today. God, I thank you for times like this. I pray these things in your name and character. Amen. Well, one of the things that I've been thinking about a lot lately as I've processed kind of where my year last year went and where I'm going this year is this whole idea of tests. And I think one of the reasons is because I feel like I've been in this test mode where certain things have been happening in my life and I'm not really sure why, and yet I feel like maybe these are places where God is growing me and really preparing me for the next thing. And I think another reason I've been thinking about that lately is a number of years ago, somebody who was kind of a mentor of mine, somebody who I admired, I never really met him, but a guy by the name of Bill Hybels who had a lot of leadership principles that affected me. I remember hearing him talk one time about 5 tests that we have to ask ourselves if we really want to go to new places. And so every year I kind of process through those at the end of the year. And today I'm going to borrow a few of his, a little of his outline as he talked about that and really personalize it to my life and help us see through some of my mistakes and through some of the things I've been growing in, maybe where we can get a glimpse into our own lives. And we're going to do this by also looking through the lens of Luke chapter 5 and what's going going on there. And so in Luke 5, Jesus is growing in popularity among people. People are increasingly being drawn to him. It's one of those things where, you know, everywhere he goes, there's a crowd. And so now when he teaches, he often will go to the edge of the water, and he'll get out on a boat and he'll push out a little bit into the water. And the reason he's doing this is he's creating a barrier. I mean, people are like pushing up against him. They have no sense of personal space. And so, you know, you go like 5, 6, 7 feet out into the water in a boat. And that's because, you know, people over that day were like 5'8", 5'9", maybe 5'10". And so if they want to keep pressing against him, they're like underwater by the time they're 6 feet out, and they're drowning at that point. So Jesus kind of creates this water barrier. You know what I'm talking about? You ever had that experience? Maybe you're in the lobby or at your workplace, and somebody comes up to you, and your personal space is like this much space, and theirs is like this right here. And they come up and they're like, "Hey, I want to talk to you." And you just like keep walking, trying to keep your space. And you're like, and they're like, "Oh, I thought you wanted to know." And you're like, "Well, I know. That's great. I really appreciate that." And you just kind of keep moving. Anybody have that experience? I mean, where somebody just totally doesn't get that? That's Jesus all the time. All right, all the time this is happening for him. And so on this occasion, Jesus decides to use this boat to actually teach or test one of his friends, one of his disciples, a guy by the name of Simon Peter. And so let's take a look at the setting here in Luke 5. Here's what it says. This will be on the screens. It says, "With the people crowding around him and listening to the word of God, he saw at the water's edge two boats left there by fishermen who were washing their nets. He got into one of the boats, and the one belonging to Simon, and asked him to put out a little from the shore." Now this is a test right here. This is a thing that Jesus asked Peter to do, and he's basically wanting to see if Peter has the stuff to have a viable relationship with God. And this is what's called the bias to action test. And one of the ways that you can kind of identify if you're kind of in a place where God's really involved in your life is whether or not you have this internal desire to need to be in the middle of the action, to make things happen, as opposed to just kind of sitting back and saying, "Well, I'm just going to sit back and see how things play out in front of me." See, it would have been easy for Peter to be like, "Oh man, look at Jesus over there. I mean, my friend, he's standing over there. There's all kinds of people crying. I'm just going to stand back here and see how he works this out." But instead, he's right up there in the middle, and Jesus says, "Hey, Peter, why don't we push out into the water a little bit?" And so that's what Peter does. He pushes their boat out into the water. This is called the bias of action test. Now, you know, we have these tests all the time. In fact, I had a bias of action test that I failed miserably at earlier this year. In fact, it still haunts me today. And I'm going to warn you, I'm going to tell you, about some of my mistakes this past year, and they're not real pretty. Someone might not set real well with you even, but this is one where I was sitting down in a meeting at Exit 5, and I had a meeting up in Anderson immediately after that. So I jump on 69, and I start traveling up 69. Right about the time I get up near exit 10, there's all kinds of trucks on the road. There are like semis all around me. And I notice there's a car parked on the right-hand side of the road, kind of on the shoulder. And as I'm approaching this, I'm trying to move lanes. I'm trying to get over, because that's the law. And I can't. I'm just surrounded by cars and semis. So I kind of slow down. And as I approach this car standing, there's somebody standing by the car. And there's this lady there, and she's doing this. And I'm looking at her, I'm like, "Man, that's kind of strange." And before long, I'm up on her. And when I get up to her, she jumps out kind of in front of the front bumper of my car. And I swerve around, and it just caught me off guard. I'm like, "Oh, my word, did I just see that?" And I look in my rearview mirror, and the semi behind me swerves way over. And I just kind of freaked out at that moment. She's trying to jump out in the middle of traffic. And it's like every jump was a little further. And I didn't know what to do. I get on my cell phone, call 911. I'm like, "I think there's somebody trying to kill themselves out here." And I don't know why I did this, but I was right at exit 10 at that point. And instead of stopping and pulling over, because I deal with people in crisis situations. Usually I run to moments like this. But for some reason, I just exited while I was talking on the phone. I drove over the overpass, over to the mall, and came down the service road back by the movie theater. I'm like, "Man, I can at least see what's going on." And there I am sitting in this service road on the other side of the highway watching this small group of people gather around, as this one semi pulled over, the car is still parked right there. And I'm just thinking, "Man, well, I guess everything must be okay. I mean, nobody seems to be in crisis mode. Nobody's running." And later in the day, I found out that sure enough, probably right a couple cars behind me must have nailed her. I mean, she committed suicide. And there I am standing, just left wondering if I could have made a difference in that. Because I didn't have a bias to action. Because for some reason in that moment, I didn't run to it. In fact, I just kind of stayed back and tried to keep a distance. And it still haunts me. I don't know if I would have been able to do anything. I don't know if I would have got there in time. But I'll never have that thing answered for me. So we have every day, maybe the bias to action tests we face every day aren't as severe. Maybe the consequences aren't as bold or grand or life-changing as that one. But we have bias to action tests every day. In fact, I don't know if you've ever been to a marina and just kind of watched boats kind of, you know, blow through the marina. I mean, they're all moving at different paces and in different directions. And it's kind of interesting. We were at a couple different marinas this summer, and just watching boats move, you know, there's something that's really interesting to me. And that is that every single boat on the water has the same access to the wind, right? The only difference is how the individual in the boat is harnessing and taking action to harness the wind to steer their watercraft. And for some of us, we're like, man, I'm not going anywhere. People are passing me by. I mean, people that are in the same position as I am in work, you know, seem to be, you know, getting breaks, and I'm not. And one of the questions we have to ask ourselves, you know, as we say, what kind of change needs to take place in me, is will I take action and adjust my life so that I can actually go in a different direction? See, this is the biased action test. And so, you know, another test that Jesus put his friend through that we can get a lot of insight from, it's really kind of caused me to have to evaluate some things in my life, is what's called the obedience test. Now, the obedience test, you know, they're standing there on the boat, and Peter's out there with Jesus. They pushed off ashore a bit, and Jesus has been teaching. He's like, well, Peter, while we're out here, why don't we just go out and fish a little bit? And Peter kind of looks at Jesus and thinks, you got a picture. He's kind of like, Jesus, seriously, you want to fish right now? Let me give you a little advice. I'm the fisherman. And no offense, but you're not. Right? I mean, last thing I checked, you're like a carpenter, and now you're doing some spiritual guru stuff on the side. And, you know, I'm the fisherman, and we've been out there all night. We haven't caught a thing all night long. We just pulled our boats in, and you just got done teaching, and now it's the heat of the day, and you want to go out fishing? I'm going to tell you, nothing is going to happen. There's absolutely nothing that's going to happen. And here's how Peter puts it in his words in verse 5. He says, Master, we've worked hard all night and haven't caught anything. But, and here's the key word right here, but because you say so, I will let down the nets. Now, I'm not the kind of guy that's ever really put bumper stickers on my car, especially religious bumper stickers, you know. Some of you are into that. It's cool if that's your thing. I guess I've got like a Love Wins sticker, but it doesn't really dictate anything religious or spiritual. But I've always heard that bumper stickers make you a bad driver. It's like you're always making a statement when you're driving, right? You can figure out if that's you or not. And so, you know, so I've just never done that. I've never been one to like put trinkets around my neck, little religious symbols, if that's your thing. Totally cool that you do that. I just don't dig doing that. I don't have any tattoos. Some people like putting religious symbols or sayings or things on their body, and if that's your thing, that's cool. Probably won't happen for me. But I don't remember that bracelet that was really big a few years ago, WWJD. Anybody kind of wear those? What would Jesus do? Let me tell you what Jesus wouldn't be doing. Jesus wouldn't be wearing some pink macrame like bracelet, you know, around with a bunch of letters on it, right? In fact, I think that's definitely what he wouldn't be doing. But if he did, if there was some chance that he would wear a bracelet that had a bunch of letters and symbols on it, I think it would have these letters instead. I think the letters would have been BBYSSIW instead. This is why Peter really fires me up right here. Because what Peter says right here, see, sometimes we face a test and we're like, man, if I want to do this, I'm going to do it. And God, you might not want me to do this thing, but I don't want to do it, and so I'm not going to do it. And you do want me to do that, so I'm not going to do it because you want me to. I want to do it, so I'm going to go ahead and do that. But oftentimes we're like, God, you know, you're asking me to step over here, but I don't really want to. And what Peter does is he says, Jesus, I'm not really sure that's a good thing, but because you say so, Jesus, I will do that. But because you say so. And it's really interesting because this is the obedience test right here. This is the obedience test. In fact, you know, the obedience test is a hard test. In fact, one of the ways it plays out the most is with our money. And, you know, sometimes when somebody's newer at Crosspoint, they'll ask me the question and explore Crosspoint sometime. And, you know, personally, they'll say, well, Kurt, why do we talk about money so much around here? Like, man, I didn't know we talked about money all that much. I mean, we appropriately talk about money around here, but I don't feel like we're over the top with it. I mean, I love talking about two things, sex and money. And we talk about those things often, and they have a lot in common with one another, but I didn't know we talked about money that much. But here's what I've began to realize. One of the reasons people feel very attuned to money conversations is because money has become our internal DNA. Money is our internal driver. Money is our internal comfort source. Money is our internal security source. Money is that benchmark that we use to see if I'm a little further ahead of the person next to me or the person in my neighborhood. Money, it becomes a benchmark for many, many things. It becomes a primary driver. In fact, if you can come to the place where you change your attitude about money, listen, your entire DNA structure will begin to change. It will begin to drastically change. And I'm just going to tell you, over the next few weeks, I'm probably going to have a lot of money illustrations because this is a big, big deal. And money is a test that I go through regularly. Julie and I, we wrestle through these things regularly. In fact, one of the tests that we felt like we were in earlier in the year was we were wrestling through whether to replace our van or not. And you know, this van we'd had for like 10 years, and we bought it used, and it had like 180,000 miles on it. And we're in the crazy campaign, and we'd committed to not get a vehicle at least for 2 years into the campaign so we could keep up and make our pledges and so on and so forth. And one of the things that happened a year ago last fall is our air conditioning went out. And we thought, oh, that's no big deal. It's fall. We've got like four months, you know, where you're not going to need air conditioning. We'll take care of that in the spring. We found out, you know, we had an unusually warm spring last winter. Remember, it was like 70 degrees on February 4th. We found out then the air still wasn't working. Took it in. Found out that it was going to cost more than the car was probably worth to replace the entire system. And we're like, well, we can eke it out for a few more months, right? And then the power window went out on the driver's door, right? So you're like going to the drive up, and we're like, oh, excuse me, let me pull up and open my door so I can take, you know, the drink. And finally, we're like, you know, one of our friends says, you've eked about as much juice out of that turnip as you're going to get. So, you know, but this was a big deal for us. We just don't buy cars regularly. And so we wanted to make it a right process and go through the right, you know, kind of check marks as we did this. And so, you know, we prayed about it and just began looking and talked quite a bit. And finally, we got to this place where we bought a new van and replaced it. It was nice. And we were like, kids, this is what it's like to ride in a new van. And, you know, and no, it wasn't new. It was like 5 years old. But it was new to us, right? There was all kinds of things we hadn't had in that van. And so, you know, it wasn't too, a week or two later, it's sitting on the drive and the kids are like, Dad, the van is dirty. We need to wash it. So, you know, we get all the stuff out, start washing it, and as I'm going around drying the side the kids had worked on, I come across and I notice these three little areas of artwork on the van. And I'm like, guys, what happened here? And they're like, well, our two-year-old, like, she grabbed a rock and was doing art on the side of the van. And I'm like, you didn't just say that. And I just lost it. I'm like, what do you mean that she was doing art on the side of the van? Why did you let her do this? I'm like, we didn't let her do this. She did it. We didn't know. I'm like, but you were there. They hadn't heard the bias to action speech yet. And so they were like, I'm like, you should have done something. And then my son steps in trying to defend his sister. He's like, Dad, I really don't think they meant to do this. I'm like, I don't care. Where were you? Why didn't you stop this? Now, mind you, this is like in the springtime. All the neighbors are out in their yard. This is in the middle of our cul-de-sac, you know. And then our five-year-old, who has these moments of like wisdom and just like random moments, she walks up and she's like, well, Dad, maybe if the van means that much to you, we should have kept the old one. Thought about that, and I said, would you shut up and just sit down? Like any healthy father would do, right? I mean, that's what healthy dads do. After it piped down a little bit, you know, 10 or 15 minutes later, you know what I realized? Man, our stuff has a way of getting a hold on us. Man, our van had never meant that much to us, though we have a new one. A five-year-old one seemed new to us. Our stuff has a way. And the question is, are we going to obey God with our stuff? I mean, are we going to obey God? You know, this is a big, big deal. You see, Peter decides to obey. He says, you know, but because you say so, Jesus, I will do this. I really don't think that anything's going to happen, but I'll do it. And so here's what happens in verse 6. It says, when they had done so, they caught such a large number of fish that their nets began to break. So they signaled their partners in the other boat to come and help them. And they came and filled both boats so full that they began to sink. I mean, I love the picture that Luke gives us right here. I mean, Peter thinks nothing's going to happen. He's like, oh, we'll do it, Jesus, because you say so. And all of a sudden, they have so much in their boat that the people in their boat can't even handle it. He's got to call his friends over to help them work through the large quantity of fish in the boat. This is how God's tests work. I mean, you either pass them or you fail them. And when you pass them, generally good things happen. When you pass them, generally there are blessings on the other side. There are good things on the other side. Now, when you fail them, sometimes bad things happen, but oftentimes bad things don't happen. Most of the time, you just stay exactly where you are. Right? You have no more right then than you did a year ago. Because you haven't passed the test. I mean, can I tell you why? It's because you haven't passed the test. It's because the test is right there, and we may be failing every test that comes our way. I'm like, God, where are you? Why am I not going to that new place? See, until you pass the test, you can't have the blessings. Until you pass the test, you can't get the good grade, the good things that come with the grade. See, this is what a test is. A test is it kind of marks the end of the previous course that you just went through. Now listen, I hated tests in high school and college. I hated tests. I did terrible at test taking, especially in high school. And one of the things I've learned, though, is tests are actually a benchmark to how much I've grown and learned. And this is how God works. God puts us through certain things, and he's like, are you going to obey or not in this situation? In order to see if we've actually grown and learned enough to go to the next place, to the next level, to go to a new place, a new sense of freshness, and a new experience in our relationship of God and what he has for us. See, God ultimately isn't interested in just a bigger catch of fish. I mean, he's ultimately not interested in just you feeling better or having exactly what you want. You know what he's interested in? He is interested in changing you. He's interested in molding and shaping you as a result of this. He's interested in creating a fuller and softer heart. And one of the ways that happens is in the classroom of growth and change and struggle. And through those, as we pass the test, we actually get a fuller, a softer heart. Let me give you a couple examples. And as I share these, you know, some of you may be living in these right now. So for some of you, this might not be on the table yet. But for some of us, maybe we've been harboring a sense of envy and bitterness for a while. Maybe it was the loss of a job, and you just have a lot of bitterness toward that company, or a loss of a relationship, or maybe a lot of bitterness in your marriage, just a lot of resentment. And you know you should get over it. You know you should move past it, but you haven't. And maybe you even know exactly what the step is that you need to take, but you haven't done that yet. And here you are 2 years later, and your relationship with God is at the same place it was 2 years ago. You've not gone anywhere. You've not grown at all. You're in the same place because you haven't passed the test. See, for some of us, you know, there's this thing in the Bible. It's really clear. It talks about giving the first 10% of our income to God, back to God, because it all comes from him. Give it back to him. It's called a tithe. And every now and then I talk to people, and they're like, oh, are you sure it really means 10%? And is it got to be, you know, 10% off the top? And what about this situation? Or I'm in this situation? Or, you know, did Jesus really mean that for everybody? And you know, it's just one of those things. And listen, when I talk to Christ followers, people who are like, hey, I'm a follower of Jesus, and yet I just don't dig that thing. I've just not you know, built that into my life yet. Listen, I don't get frustrated. You know what I get? I get sad. I get sad because as I'm talking to people, wrestle through this, I realize, man, this is somebody who's just stalled out. It's somebody who's ready, saying, why can't I break through? Why can't I go to that next place? And they're not able to do that because the test is still sitting there on the table. They're not taking the test. You know, it might be, you know, a body issue. I mean, you know, on one side of that issue, maybe some of us aren't in as good a shape as we should be. Right? I mean, you know, and we've got all the excuses. We're like, I'm quirky that way. I can work out and I don't lose weight, so I just don't work out. Or, you know, that's just the way I am. It's just my personality. And I mean, and maybe God says to us, hey, I gave you this body, and I asked you to steward it and take care of it and treat it well, and you're just not doing that. Listen, this, if I can be honest, this is one of my big issues from last year. This is where I've had an outage. This is where, as I went through, kind of saying, Kurt, where do I need to change and go to a new place? And I have all the excuses, man. I could give you the whole list. I could tell you I had a meniscus tear in February and wasn't able to work out and do activity for, you know, for the summer because I couldn't have surgery till October and I had to rehab from that. I mean, I could give you all the reasons, but here's what I know. Here's what I've learned. I ate through that whole period like I was working out twice a day, right? I mean, I even joke about it with people. I'm like, man, I should be running like you, but I eat every day like I run like you, but I'm not doing it. And honestly, this is a place where I've just felt an outage in my life. I feel like this is a place where my life is just kind of at a bad place, and I'm missing out because I've not obeyed God by taking care of my body. And then the other side of that is maybe you know, our body is our God. I mean, maybe we're on the other side of that. And if the rest of our life was as committed as we are to the gym, then our life would be in a great place. But we're all about body beautiful because we want people to see us and identify and look at us and admire us and say, oh, they look good. They take care of themselves. That, you know, we want people to have that kind of feeling when they see us. We, you know, we wear things so people will notice. And there's that extreme as well. And one of the questions is, you know, on either end of this, there's a test where God says, you're going to treat your body the way that I created it to be treated. See, and the thing is, until we pass the test, we don't get the blessings that come with it. And when we realize that, I mean, when we get to that place of realizing that we're in the classroom and there are certain tests and we pass them, then we go to that next place. Then we are thrown into what's called the self-awareness test. This is the next test. And you see, Peter sees all these fish come into the boat. And I love his response. Look at what he says right here. Verse 8. It says, he fell at Jesus' knees and said, "Go away from me, Lord. I am a sinful man." See, I love this. Because you know what most fishermen would have done? Most fishermen would have been like, "That's right, I'm the man. Look at my fish. Hey, all my friends, gather around. I need you to help me unload all of these fish I caught." They'd been Twittering about it. "Hey, look at my catch, everybody." Because you know that's what those things are, right? Twitter, Facebook, it's like everybody's highlight reel. Then you go home feeling bad because everybody's life is better than yours. Right? And so, you know, they'd been like, "Hey, look," but not Peter. And you're like, "No, I don't do that. I mean, I hunt, I fish. I don't ever call everybody in. But maybe you had a great financial year this past year. Maybe you had the best financial year ever. And you're standing around at a Christmas gathering with your brother-in-law who's like, "Man, it's really sucked this year. And man, can you help me? I want to learn what really helped you have a great year." And you're just standing around saying, "Man, I just made some great decisions at work. I executed well at the office, so I got a raise. You know, I managed my stock portfolio really well. I, me. I created it all." See, Peter, either way, fishing or handling finances, either way, there's a sense of unawareness there. See, Peter doesn't have that. What Peter has is, look at what he does. He sees all these fish. He's like, "Man, this is not me. I had nothing to do with this. Jesus, you must have had everything to do with this right here. This is definitely not me. Jesus, I'm not you. And man, I don't have it all together. There's no way I could have created this." See, here's the thing. Whether you know it or not, there's a DNA structure in the world that works like this. It says that you never admit to weakness. You never admit to a mistake. It says that you should always blame other people if things don't go the way that they were expected to go. And the only time you take credit is when things go really, really well, even if you didn't have anything to do with it. So that's what the DNA structure of the world says. And that's why this self-awareness test is so important. And we have to ask ourselves, you know, do I see myself the way that I really am, or do I see myself the way I want people to see me? Or do I see myself the way that I want to be a year from now? You know, or the way I'm going to be someday? I mean, that's a really hard question. You know, do you see yourself the way you really are? Because see, most people don't. Most people don't. In fact, you know, it's kind of like this. It's kind of like, you know, when you're a toddler and you're sitting around and you're sitting in a dirty diaper and you know, you're like, "Man, something's kind of warm and really stinks right here. It must be mine, but it's warm and it's cozy and I like it, so I think I'll keep it." Right? You just kind of keep sitting in it and it's stinking up for everybody around you, but it's warm and it's cozy and you like it, so you're like, "I'm just going to stay right here." That's what we do. We sit around in our crap all the time, right? And we're like, instead of getting a different perspective or saying, you know, maybe things could be different, we just sit around enjoying it and smelling it and stinking around for everybody else. I mean, we have this amazing way of doing this because we're unself-aware. Where might I be unself-aware? Where might I be, you know, bringing an attitude or an activity or a behavior or something into this part, into my work life, family life, my parenting life, where I'm just, it's just kind of stinking the place up. Self-awareness test. It's a big test. Let's go on. Luke 5, verse 9. "So he and all his companions were astonished at the catch of fish they had taken. And so were James and John, the sons of Zebedee, Simon's partners. And Jesus said to Simon, 'Don't be afraid. From now on, you will catch men.'" Now, this is great right here. See, I totally dig how Jesus lays this out, because this is always how God works right here. It's so fascinating, because see, when you and I, when we go through a test, we're like, "Man, I made it through the test. I passed." And we're like, "I'm all good now. Everything's dandy. I'm just coasting along in the harbor. You know, nothing hanging over my head. I don't have to engage in anything." And what Jesus is saying right here is, he's like, "All right, you've passed the bias to action test. You've passed the obedience test. You've now passed the self-awareness test. Now it's time to go into the next classroom. And from now on, Peter, I don't want you just going after fish. You're going to be going after men. You're going to be going after something bigger. What I'm going to say is, I want you to forget that bluegill, crappy, you know, carp thing, whatever's out in that water. You're going to forget all that stuff. But I'm going to make you an offer. And if you're willing to take it, from now on, you're going to be about people. You're going to be about those creations that are closest to the heart of God right here. And you know, if you want it, you know, this is yours to have. And you know what this is called? This is called the grander vision test. The grander vision test. And this is what God does in our life. We go through certain tests. We pass certain tests. We get shaped and formed in certain ways by going through the classroom experience and passing the test. And all of a sudden, God comes to me and says, oh, great, man, you're happy with that right now? Great. How about this? And he shows us something else, something bigger, something grander, something more, something that has more impact. And we're like, yeah, yeah, I want that. I want that. I'm all about that. I want the bigger thing until we see the whole picture. And when we see the whole picture, all of a sudden, sometimes we don't want it anymore. Because with the grander vision also comes a grander price tag. See, the next big thing is always a bigger thing. It requires more. It's a grander thing, but always, it always has a bigger cost. And that's how it works physically in the physical world. It's how it works in the financial world. It's how it works in the leadership world. That's how it works in the spiritual world. And this is why it's called a test, called the grander vision test. Now, this is a test I've kind of been flip-flopping on for the last year or so. I mean, I've really wrestled through this test as we've been zeroing in on, you know, breaking ground for our next facility, for our launch pad across the street. And we were really hoping that was going to happen at the end of 2012. And now, we're looking at late winter, early spring this year. And, as we've been in the development process and the design process and working with architects, and we're working with our lenders and had the current crazy campaign and just this whole deal, I'm like, man, this is good. I mean, we really got a clear picture of here's what we can do right now. Here's what we can do with our current crazy campaign. Here's what we can do with what our lenders are willing to loan us. And we were kind of going toward that. And I'll never forget the moment when we took these plans into a meeting with our broader leadership here at Crosspoint, said, hey, here's what we can do right now. And I just remember the deflation in the room. As people saw the size of what we were able to do, it was a good-sized facility. It was more than what we need for right now. But at the same time, there was just this sense of that's not going to be enough. And yet I was kind of ignoring that. I was kind of like, man, I'm cozy, I'm good. I mean, and yet we began to explore and say, we need something a little more than that. And I knew what it was going to require. I knew it was going to require that we were going to have to start another capital campaign, that we were going to have to go into what's going to be called the launch campaign, as you'll hear about here in a few weeks. And people who are a little more spiritually attuned than me were coming saying, Kurt, this is not large enough. And see, I was kind of ignoring this sense. I mean, God had been telling me, Kurt, you're going to have a pervading influence. Crosspoint's going to have an influence. There are more hearts and people in this community that you're going to continue to reach. You're going to continue to share this good news, this hope, this message of Christ with. And you have some room to expand there, but before long, you're going to be turning around in this place and having to add on. And you guys need to stretch. Well, I was comfy. I didn't want to stretch. I knew what it was going to cost. Me personally, Julie and I knew what it cost on the leadership level, on the emotional level, on the physical level. But we came to this place saying, all right, we're gonna expand. And I'm not talking expanding a lot. I'm talking like 2,000 square feet that opened a whole lot of opportunity up for us. It was the grander vision test. I remember coming to the place where I'm like, God, I really don't want to do this. But if this is the grander vision you have for this place and for what we're doing, then, I'm okay with that. I'm okay with whatever it'll cost us. And that's what God does in our lives. That's what He does. He brings us to those places and He grows us spiritually. Because listen, God doesn't care about our stuff. He didn't care about our accomplishments. He doesn't care about, what we've attained or our reputation. What He cares about is what's happening in and through us, how we're being shaped and molded. And all of this happens in the classroom as we go through things that test and allow us to grow from one phase to the next. And then the last test, which is probably the hardest, is the will you leave it behind test. So He says to these guys, hey, you want to be fishers of men? Great. You want bigger fish to fry? Great. And here's what they do in Luke 5. So they pulled their boats up on shore and they left everything and followed Him. He's like, man, it's great. You want to go after men now and leave the bluegill and the sunfish behind. But now, let me ask you to leave your occupation and that you've trained on, that you've known, that your reputation is built on, everything you've been known by. I'm asking you to just kind of step away from that if you want to go after something grander. And the test now is, are you going to leave something behind that you've known in order for something that you don't? And every year, I come to the new year, I have to ask myself some questions. I work through these tests every year. And I have to ask myself, you know, how much of my security and comfort is in God, and how much it is in just what I know and what I can control right now? How much of it is in my position or my title, or I know what the next 3 or 5 months or 6 months look like? How much of my comfort and my security come from, you know, the money I have around me, or the stuff that I've accumulated, or my reputation or the title? And I have to ask myself, you know, how much am I leaning into that, and am I leaning into what God has for me? It's kind of awkward for me to share this with you, but I'm going to be honest. I hate missing benchmarks. I mean, we were supposed to break ground in the fall, late fall, early winter. I hate missing that. And it's not like we weren't working on it and plans weren't being developed, and the process is just taking longer. But I'm going to be honest. I think part of the reason the process is longer is because God's been preparing my heart and the hearts of this community for this grander thing that He has. And I felt like at times my respect was on the line. I'm talking to people, my reputation. They're like, "Hey, weren't you supposed to be in that building already? Aren't you guys moving? When are you doing that?" And I'm like, "Man, Kurt, you're a failure. That's what I'm hearing. You're a failure. You didn't hit it. You haven't started yet." And yet I had to walk away and say, "Is this, Kurt, about your reputation, or is this about God, God's grander vision, and being willing to not have your plan in place, but God's plan in place?" Through the affirmation of our leadership, we realize this is what God's calling us to do. It's not about my plan. It's not about my reputation. It's about, am I willing to walk away and go into someplace new? It's not always comfy and cozy. See, God cares about your spiritual formation. He cares about your relationship with Him. He cares about the relationship you may have with Him. You may start with Him this year. And the primary tool that He has in His hand is this different tests that He put us through that stretch us to the next thing. And the next thing is not a thing. The next thing is a growing intimacy in your trust and relationship with God. And my hope is that amidst this place, amidst the start of this year, amidst the test that you're in right now, that you might realize the exact piece of paper that's in front of you. And you might realize, man, this is the test that I've really got to come face to face with and pass to go to that next place as I go into 2013. So to that end, I want to ask you to take out your connection cards. And on the back side are some next steps. And we give these every week. It's just some practical ways to walk this out. And today, we're going to put this list of tests up. These have been very shaping for me. I work through these at the end of every year. I want you to just ask yourself, what test is before me? What's the piece of paper on the table in front of me? See, next week we're going to talk about the process of change. Then we're going to talk about the barriers to change. But we can't really go through that if we haven't identified where we're stuck, where we're stalled. What's the test in front of me that I need to go through in order to go to that next new place? So take a few moments and just let God kind of bring that to your mind and mark that. Make a commitment. Mark it on your card and say, "Hey, here's what I'm going to really focus on and pray on and really work toward getting through this week." And then we're going to sing. The band's going to help us just sing and really just kind of humble ourselves before God of saying, "God, we're going to trust as we go into 2013. We're going to say, this is your year, God, not mine. This is your plan, not my plan." And we're just going to allow God to really kind of move us and focus on Him in these next moments.